Hi, I'm Suze, and I have the pleasure of talking about mudita this afternoon. So by now, our hearts are all soft and tender, having been touched by the talks and the opening practices from Lauren and Steve. Big thank you to both of you. And then there was all the gratitude that we felt during lunch and our ability to smell and taste. And I hope this is true for all of you, that you have plenty to eat, enough to eat, and are living in a warm and safe environment, that you're healthy and that your loved ones are healthy. So we have a lot to be grateful for as well. So really sense that soft and tender heart and remember that as we dive into what sometimes is a little more challenging. There seems to be a good reason why mudita is the third of the four Brahma Viharas, that it comes after we've spent some time tenderizing ourselves with kindness and compassion. In Pali, the original language of the Buddha, mudita means to be pleased, to have a sense of gladness. We usually translate it as sympathetic joy, to be happy or rejoice in the happiness and good fortune of others. Sounds easy, but not always. Because we've all had experiences where we're feeling kind of small and contracted, maybe batted around by the eight worldly winds, feeling invisible, unappreciated, seeking validation, wanting to be somebody. I remember a time a number of years ago when I was struggling with exactly those kinds of constrictive emotions and mind states, and my partner looked at me and he said, "How old are you right now?" He liked asking that. And I reflected on it and I thought, oh, maybe 5 or 6, because I was feeling like I did as the youngest of three. I was often ignored, dismissed, and teased by my siblings. And so many of our beliefs about ourselves, so many of our emotional habits started when we were pretty young. Often we come up with a belief that there's only so much joy or happiness in the world, and if someone else gets a whole bunch of it, there's not going to be any left over for me. These habits of mind and heart, they're just what they are. They're just beliefs. They're just habits. In the very first fold of the Eightfold Path, the Buddha asks us in wise view to examine these beliefs. Are these really based in truth? And of course, just as Steve was reminding us about the Buddha teaching suffering and the end of suffering, do our beliefs help alleviate suffering, or do they add more suffering to our lives and the lives of others? Over the years of my practice, I've heard a lot of teachings on the Brahma Viharas and done quite a bit of practice with them. And yet it always seems like the focus is on loving kindness, compassion, and equanimity. And maybe it's been my own bias, but it has felt like mudita has often gotten short shrift, and that sometimes is just talked about in terms of joy. In Sharon Salzberg's book, Loving Kindness, that Lauren mentioned earlier, she says that mudita is considered to be the most difficult of the Brahma Viharas to develop. And I think this is because when we're feeling small or contracted, it can be really challenging. So I'm asking, my first question is, has mudita ever been hard for you? Have you ever kind of faked it? Someone else has this really fabulous news and you go, oh, that's so nice, but inside it's like, not really so much. Envy is only one of the barriers to mudita, but certainly a prevalent one. Right now there's all this vaccine envy, we're happy for those of us who've received it. But still a little bit, if you haven't yet gotten your vaccine, it's kind of like, well, what about me? And then here we all are stuck at home, and I have really good friends who took off in their camper weeks ago, and they're posting all these adventures they're having. They're now in Mexico in their camper, and here it is. Well, today it's a beautiful day in Seattle, but It's been pretty gray and cold and rainy and snowy. So there's this, you know, that kind of envy that comes up. In Sharon's book, she identifies other constricting mind states in addition to envy, things like comparing and judging and all the thoughts and actions that grow out of them. We might judge the choices that other people make and then even question whether their resulting happiness is like legitimate. We might find it really difficult to rejoice in others' good fortune if those others are people that we don't really like very much. So mudita can be challenging. But ever since the four of us met and we divvied up who was going to do what and I chose mudita, I've been having a pretty good time exploring my own resistance to it and my own doorways into it. So while we know that old beliefs can be challenging, that certainly the three poisons of greed, hatred, and delusion can be poisoning, can be difficult, the clinging and pushing away and ignorance that Steve pointed to, all of that can get in the way. But I've got some good news. The first is that envy or judging or comparing and all the other constrictive emotions that might prevent you from immediately feeling sympathetic joy, these emotions are universal. Everyone feels them at some point, and they're just visitors. They're not permanent residents. Second, you know, we all came here because we wanted to spend a day keeping our heart open. And mudita is actually a great practice for that. It builds on the softening and tenderizing that Lauren and Steve led us through this morning. And that softening of the heart comes along with our kind of realization that everyone wants to be happy. We follow compassion, which really connects us to everyone. And while Sharon Salzberg says that it's the most difficult Brahma Vihara to develop, she also says that it's so potent a quality that expressing it can defeat the aversion and attachments that bind us. So I say, wow, it's pretty worth the practice. Mudita can sometimes feel kind of self-serving. We allow another person's happiness into our hearts, and it gladdens us, you know, kind of small ways every day. I live in a warehouse up on the second floor, and I have tenants both behind me and below me. And I'd say 3-4 times a week, I wake up in the morning and the tenants below me are laughing. And it just kind of, you know, I have no idea what they're laughing about, but it just kind of brings a smile to my face and it makes me feel really good. Mudita, this sympathetic joy, can be seen as a gift that is freely given. You know, all you have to do is go to any of your social media devices and see all these amazing, happy little images. Lately, the one of the little girl with Down syndrome who is holding hands with the Pope. You know, it's hard not to bring a smile to your face. Or the pictures that are posted often in the Northwest of the orcas swimming in Puget Sound. I found that some of the best ways to genuinely experience mudita is to focus on really wholesome feelings of love, connection, and understanding. Moments of envy or judging or comparing can arise, but compared to the depth of the love, caring, connection, and understanding, the envy kind of takes a back seat. So I want to share just a couple of my own experiences. So I birthed one child, a son, but I consider that I'm a parent to my niece, who's my sister died when my niece was 20, and both she and my son are in their 50s. I love them both deeply. And as I mentioned before, you know, I've had last year in January, I was in Kauai visiting my niece. Well, that's where she lives right now because she's a professor and she can teach from anywhere. So she tells me about surfing and swimming when she's not teaching and biking in the sun. And then my son is going to, he and his wife are going to Palm Springs. And sure, there's this little envy that comes up, but the love is so strong and my desire for their happiness is so strong that that little bit of envy just really doesn't play much of a role. So love can be a really good place to start. So can just more generalized connections. I am seldom more happy than when I'm in a huge demonstration for peace or justice or whatever. But with all the Black Lives Matter marches last summer, I didn't go to any of them out of my concern for COVID. And when people told me about how inspiring it was and all these young people and they had such a good time at it and stuff, I could feel the connection with their happiness because I remembered my own happiness when I'm in a crowd of people who are all inclining their minds and hearts towards the good. So just feeling that connection kind of helped me let that sympathetic joy for my friends who were there to arise. Sometimes just a general understanding can be a bridge to mudita. When we know what joy really feels like in our own bodies, minds, and heart, we can sense what other people are going through. We know how joy can just change a mood, give us perspective, open up doorways to tackle difficulties. And probably all of us at some point have had the joy of a really good relationship. Might have been with a parent, a sibling, a loved one, a partner, or a spouse. And even if the specific relationship that someone is telling you about and how joyful they feel, even if that's something you've never personally experienced, you know that sense of joy that comes from being cared about and being loved. I love hearing stories from my women friends telling about their relationships with their fathers. My father died when I was really little, and I never had that. And yet I know what it means to have somebody who's really looking out for you, who really cares about your well-being. And so when my friends tell me those memories, I can feel their joy. So love, connection, understanding, those are good doorways. There's some other things I want to talk about in terms of what supports mudita. I guess the first, which I've already mentioned, is we've come here after lunch with soft hearts, that whatever in your life keeps your heart open, whatever that is, to remember every day to do that, you know, whether it's just thinking about someone who's far away, bringing them into your thoughts, maybe writing a note to somebody, picking up the phone, whatever it is that keeps that heart soft, I think is a really good way to support mudita. Like I said about earlier about my own experience, when you fully experience the joy in your heart and the joy in your life, that really helps. If there's a day or a period of your life where it's really hard to access that, it's just, you know, the circumstances are rough, you're just not there. I don't know how many of you listen to Tiwari's talk on 10% happiness on mudita. It's part of our resources, so you can go there. But she says, if you can't access it really easily, go borrow some. There's lots of joy out there to borrow. And whether it's videos of laughing babies, my personal favorite are little baby goats. But whatever gets you going, you know, just really allow that to come in and don't discount it too quickly. You know, really sense, well, what happens when I see all these laughing babies? What does that feel like in my body? Remember that. It might seem weird for me to bring this next one up, but I think it's really important that we also have to practice with really knowing what dukkha is. Because when you really know what that sense of constriction or envy or comparing or judging, what that feels like in the body. And again, it's the self-serving part of this. None of us want to stay in that state of constricted, tense, resistant kind of body, heart, and mind. But we need to know what that experience is so that we also know what it feels like when we're in a more relaxed, open-hearted space. And I think it's really important to remember, and this is true, I think, throughout our entire practice, that just because certain constricting emotions or the hindrances are really up or whatever is happening, it's not a problem. It's just part of being human that just because envy arises doesn't mean that love and joy can't be there at the same time. I don't know what Lindell's going to talk about around equanimity, but I see equanimity as one of the aspects is telling us that it's both and. It's not pushing one away so that the other can be there. They can coexist. And of course, mindfulness is always our go-to as to what helps us in any kind of way. That we recognize when envy comes up or when we feel resistance and tension and feeling that genuine joy and happiness for another's isn't really there, or it's kind of there, but it's not really. I get the daily meditations from a Burmese teacher named Utejaniya. And a few weeks ago, his teaching said, when you recognize wrong attitude, there is wisdom there. It's just as important as knowing when right attitude is up. So when you really know and feel that those constrictive mind states that prevent a full-hearted response to a friend's joy, when those are up and you know it and you're bringing mindfulness to that, it's just as important as when it's all just easy peasy and you just feel that love for someone else. I want to go back to the point about love. And of course, we all know that it's a terrible word and that it gets used and misused and stuff. But I'm talking about that deepest desire for another person's well-being. And hopefully all of us have at one point or another experienced that. I had the blessing of being partnered with Bill for 35 years, and he had both one of the most critical and in-your-face kind of attitudes, but also the most expansive heart. And throughout our relationship, when we first got together, he brought this concept in. And then as we were together longer, we both adopted this concept and turned it into a commitment. And the commitment was that if any time either one of us believed that we would be happier elsewhere, outside of the relationship, that the other would support the person. It was a commitment that made the love for the other person bigger and more important than either of us just wanting to hold on to things the way they were. And I keep that kind of expansive view of love that, as Lauren started us this morning, that, you know, our heart is huge. I mean, I don't mean, you know, the actual, hopefully your heart isn't huge because then where you have a medical problem, but more metaphorically, the heart has this enormous capacity. A few years ago, I sat a retreat with a teacher and two couple teachers, and they described the Brahma Viharas at four faces of love. Metta is the love that connects. Karuna, or compassion, is the love that responds. Mudita, sympathetic joy, is the love that celebrates. And Upekkha, equanimity, is the love that allows. So mudita, the love that celebrates, think about how you feel at a celebration, whether it's a birth of a child, a wedding, a birthday, just good friends getting together, whatever it is. And you know that everyone feels good in a celebration. So Sharon Salzberg says that mudita is boundless. As it develops, we're able to rejoice in the well-being of others, whether we like them or not. That's a lovely aspiration, a really worthwhile endeavor. And these are some words that Lindell used in our previous day of mindfulness on Brahma Viharas, which were so good, and I'm going to end with, that joy is so essential. It helps to guard the heart from being overwhelmed by the vastness of suffering. All manifestations of joy help us to live with a mind that feels like a friend. And I think mudita is an antidote to that small, constricted self, which often closes the door to joy.